Right before?
Yeah, the whole world sort of shifted.
Because everything
after that.
Went kooky around March, right?
Yeah, so it was February 2020, and then we have COVID, and then we have, you know, we've had Trump in between of that, we had BLM. That summer of 2020, everything just exploded and went mad. And yeah, and then everything shifted.
So. And then you wrote a book. It's called The End of Woke, How the Culture War Went Too Far and What to Expect from the Counter-Revolution. Isn't that how it always goes, though? It goes like we go too far, yeah. and then we overcorrect, and we become Nazis.
Yeah. Or... That's it. Exactly. Well, you know,
or it's the opposite. We go socialist. You know,
it's a big pendulum. I get that. It sort of goes back and forth. I mean, I was trying to, in that book, I'm trying to make the point that what woke was like a kind of the latest manifestation of a kind of innate authoritarian impulse. I think human beings are by default quite inclined towards just shutting people up if they don't like them.
Yeah.
Just imposing their authority. And so woke, a lot of people are annoyed that I've called it the end of woke. I'm not saying it's all over, let's just go home, forget about it. It's still going on. But the point about it is that in its current manifestation, things are changing now so rapidly. We are moving into some sort of new phase. And that authoritarianism, which we've associated with the left, might come up from the right. It could come up from anywhere. It's what you say about the pendulum. So you just have to be kind of vigilant about it. I don't think we were vigilant. I think that's why woke happened. We weren't vigilant against this prospect that, you know, authoritarianism could emerge in what we thought was a free society.
Well, authoritarianism, it snuck in.
Ahora continuamos con el podcast. Pero antes, ¿sabías que solo uno de cada cinco oyentes llega al final de un episodio? Por eso, resumimos tus podcasts favoritos. Entra en nuestra web para saber más.
In through a sheep costume.
Yeah, you know, wolf in a sheep's costume.
Yeah, it was a costume of being more inclusive, being more open-minded, right. being a better society, being kinder. You know, it led to, you know, child trans surgeries, led to chaos. It led to like a lot of like really fucking freaky things that you'd have never expected. People saying that the First Amendment's not important.
Right.
What's more important is protecting people.
Well, that was the key, wasn't it? The point was that the way it worked was that it was gulling people through language that sounded really sweet and kittenish and fluffy. You know, things like equity. Well, that sounds a lot like equality, doesn't it? But it doesn't mean equality. It means treating people unequally to ensure equal outcomes according to group identity. That's a very different thing. You say you're talking about, let's make everything inclusive. But what you really mean is let's exclude anyone who disagrees with what we've got to say. Right. So you're using language to mean the exact opposite. They say gender-affirming care. Do they mean that? Or do they mean affirming what is effectively a pseudoscientific belief among vulnerable people? So it's all about misusing language because most people, I think, or I like to think, are pretty decent.
Yeah.
Like most people want to be kind and want to be fair. And when you hear these activists saying, be kind, be compassionate, or else, right? You know, you kind of think, okay... Well, maybe their intentions are good, but also they're pretty scary. I mean, there was a weird thing with the woke thing, which was that on the one hand, it proclaimed to be this sort of great, virtuous, kind, progressive right side of history. How often did you hear that phrase?
Right.
And at the same time, they're like dangerous dogs. Like you're like, oh, I better not piss them off. I better not say the wrong thing in the workplace because they'll destroy you.
Well, I always find that the most preposterous the idea is and the least capable it is to stand up to scrutiny, the more violent the enforcement of that idea will be.
Yeah.
Because you cannot combat that. You can't defend that idea with logic, so you have to defend it with fear and force and just shouting people down. And that's what we saw. And that's... It's a natural impulse of human beings.
Absolutely.
Like when you're arguing with a kid, you know, when you're a kid and you're arguing with a kid and you say something, you don't even know you shut the fuck up. Like they just start scaring you.
So why is it though that some countries and some societies seem to protect themselves better than others against that impulse? And I feel at the moment that the UK is kind of failing where America is to a degree succeeding, not in obviously in all ways, but when it comes to the idea of freedom and free speech. Like, I think UK is pretty fallen to the kind of the woke insistence that you need to control people's language so that you can create this perfect society, which can never come anyway. It's just utopia.
Well, I think it's been co-opted. I think whatever organic version of that emerges naturally from society where there's an overcorrection. I think in the UK, because you guys don't have free speech laws, because it's just different over there.
Yeah.
You can get away with a lot of crazy shit. Like, first of all, like, we should explain what we're talking about. More than 12,000 people have been arrested in the UK in the past year for social media posts. And if you read some of those social media posts, they're not even remotely terrifying. It's not like I'm going to grab a knife and go cut the head off of every immigrant I see. Like, hey, buddy, maybe we should lock this guy up and evaluate him. He sounds like a crazy person. Like, no, the immigrants are coming into this fucking country and creating all this crime. Knock on the door. Yeah. You're going to jail.
I worry that Americans think we're mad. Sometimes
we do.
Yeah, do you?
We do now. Yeah, we think you've lost it.
Yeah.
We also think something happened where your leaders are intentionally trying to tank your country. It seems like they're trying to bring in as many migrants as possible, cater to them, not to the British people, and do it openly so that everyone knows what they're doing, create chaos on the streets because of it.
Yeah, I mean, people have a phrase for that, anarcho-tyranny, you know, where you punish people who aren't breaking the law, but you protect those who are.
And right.
I think with the, I mean, I don't know the extent that Americans know the, I mean, the stat you quoted, that came from the Times newspaper in London, which had a freedom information request to the police, found out that it's 12,000 a year on average. So that's like 30 a day, not just being investigated or looked into, but being arrested.
But over the last few years only, if you go back, it's only like 1,000 or 500.
It was 3,000 last time we spoke, back in 2020. 3,
was
000.
It really
yeah,
a
it
year?
Was. It was.
Back then?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So we already had that problem. I mean,
I didn't know it was that many. That's crazy, even back then.
It was already really high. I mean, we had stuff like the old stories of like, there was that guy in 2010 who made a joke online about, he was at Doncaster Airport in the UK. He said, oh, if this queue doesn't hurry up, I'm going to blow up the airport. It's a stupid, funny tweet. Mm-hmm. He went all the way to court. That was a full trial. So these laws, and I think what happens with this stuff is people don't realize how long this has been embedded in the UK. We have hate speech laws that are encoded in a number of different legislations. We have a thing called the Public Order Act. We have a thing called Malicious Communications Act. That's from 1988. We have the Communications Act from 2003. And all of these things criminalize, I tell you, I kid you not, language in the statute books is if it's grossly offensive. That's the phrase. If you post something that is grossly offensive, you can go to court, you can be prosecuted. But, you know, I find...
So subjective.
Well, that's it. What does that even mean? I find laws against free speech to be grossly offensive.
Right.
So should the British state be arrested? I don't know. And there's one, I think it's in the Malicious Communications Act, where it talks about needless anxiety. Causing needless anxiety can get you arrested. And you think that's not a thing. I can give you a specific example. I have once, my friend Winston Marshall, I worry that if I try it, I'll cough and I'll look really wimpish and pathetic.
And it won't be good for your arguments.
It will backfire. It'll undermine everything. It'd be like I'm sitting here with a paper hat on at Christmas, undermining all of my key points.
Right.
I like the flavour and I like being around smokers because my grandmother used to chain smoke around me, so it's kind
of boy.
Well, she's Northern Irish, you know. I mean, it's the way they do. She used to give me whiskey when I was three to calm me down, you know.
So oh wow,
it's that sort of family.
That's an old thing they used to do with kids. They, just
they
put
did
it in their babies. They put it in their mouth.
It
like
worked.
Like they would dip their finger in whiskey and rub it on the inside of a kid's mouth.
If you're struggling with a child, get it drunk. That's how you. It's old Northern Irish wisdom. I don't think you should scoff at it. It's a good thing. But I'll be more
I
than
think
happy
it's
to.
It's grossly offensive.
It's grossly offensive. The example I was going to give was this guy called Darren Brady. And this sounds made up. And whenever I tell people this, it sounds made up. He posted a meme. I don't know if you saw this meme where it was the four Progress Pride flags. You know, that's got the crazy triangles and stuff in it.
You put them all together and they become a swastika.
Exactly that. Right. And that was going everywhere. And he posted it. And there's a video of him being arrested, put in handcuffs. He's an army veteran, by the way, right? Put in handcuffs by the police. And the policeman says in the video, you caused someone anxiety. So the actual language from the law is being used for this rearrangement of the... And you know what? That's quite a good satirical point that he was making. It wasn't even his meme. He was just retweeting a meme. But even if it was some horrible offensive thing, who cares?
Is that offensive?
Well, I guess...
I mean, well, you can find... That's the problem. You can find anything offensive. You could find... anything grossly offensive if you're extremely sensitive.
You could. But wasn't there a point to that? I mean, he was kind of saying that the LGBTQIA plus movement has become quite authoritarian.
Yeah.
He's not saying they're actual Nazis. And he's saying, oh, isn't it quite funny that when you put them together, it looks like a swastika? The idea that you get handcuffed for that,
especially for a retweet, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
It's retweets, it's tweets, it's posts. We've had memes are the big ones. So there was a guy called Lee Joseph Dunn, who went to prison for 8 weeks. That was last year, I think, for 3 memes that he posted.
8 weeks.
8 weeks in prison. I'll tell you what the most offensive of the 3 memes was, and you can tell me whether you think it was worth prison time. He put a picture of some immigrants with knives, and underneath it said, coming to a town near you. And that was it. So I don't know if you think that's worth prison time.
That's the most offensive one?
Of the 3, that's the most.
What's the least offensive one?
I can't remember what the other 2 were. Because I remember I looked at them, I thought, well, that's not even worth thinking about. But this one was the one that really, because they say in England, you're stirring up hatred against minorities through the spreading of the meme.
Right.
You know, but that's clearly not sufficient, you know. I think in the US you have far more protections. I wonder whether it's to do with the fact that in the US you have the First Amendment. Like, so you have something codified that says you can say what you want. We've never had that.
It's very important. And it didn't seem important 20 years ago or 30 years ago, because no one ever looked at England as being that kind of a country that would just put people. Well, obviously, this was all pre-social media.
Yeah, yeah.
And England has always been a fairly polite society.
Yes.
But the thing is, like, now pub talk has become illegal, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you say something offensive in a pub, you're subject to be arrested, and they're asking people to turn people in.
There's a thing called the banter ban, which the Labour government was trying to put in. Here's the logic of the banter ban. I've forgotten about this, but now you've mentioned it. They wanted to introduce this law so that, for instance, if you're working in a bar or a pub and you overhear someone who says something against your protected characteristic, say you're a gay barman and someone says, oh, I don't like the gays or something, and you overhear it, your employer has a duty to protect you from that kind of hate speech, that kind of harm. So therefore, there's going to be a blanket ban on speech on certain kinds of speech within the pub, right? I would say the guy who's eavesdropping, he's the problem, right? You shouldn't be listening in on other people's conversations. So that's a real thing.
Yes.
And I guess it all comes down to this view, which I think is completely wrong, that words and violence are the same thing, that words can create a more violent society, that there's a direct causal link between the stuff that people say and the stuff that people say online to how people behave in the real world. And I think you guys have got it right, because you've got the Brandenburg test. Do you know about the test for incitement to violence in the US?
No, what is that?
It's basically a test that was established, I think, back in the 60s. It was a KKK leader called Clarence Brandenburg who was prosecuted for incitement to violence. And the test that was established since that precedent was that any words that can be convicted for incitement to violence, they have to be intended to cause violence, likely to cause violence, and the violence must be imminent.
Recent discussions highlighted the crucial differences in legal thresholds for incitement to violence between the US and UK. This context sets the stage for exploring the broader implications of societal reactions to controversial figures, like King Charles III, where perceived messaging and art fuel suspicion and conspiracy. How does this shape modern discourse?
Or, you know, pastel.
So what are you saying? Are you already suspicious? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, the photo's nuts. Like, the painting is nuts.
Where's the goat?
So all you have to do is put it together, side by side. You don't have to do that much. You exaggerated how much you have to
do. No, I saw a video.
Trust me.
Look at it upside down. Looks.
Oh, no, look.
The other way, I found a goat. Put it back.
Wait a minute.
Show that one. That one.
I can completely see the goat now.
That's 100% a goat. They did it on purpose. That's a sign. Go back to the other one, though. Click on that one. I see a goat there. I see some evil demon. Right. Look at the 2 eyeballs. Yeah, bro.
Where?
100%. Stop. Stop trying to gaslight me. I see a monster.
Oh, well. I mean,
you can find something in everything, man.
It looks all superimposed.
I can see Martha Stewart in that.
The Virgin Mary and a grilled cheese sandwich.
Right. You can see it in the clouds and the rocks. There's a term for this where our brains look for patterns and things.
I had a conversation once with a friend of mine that I didn't know was going crazy.
Right.
And he goes, hey, you want to see something crazy? And he pulls out his phone and he shows me a cloud.
Yeah.
And I go, what is that? He goes, dude, I'm seeing this all day. And he shows me some other ones. He's got like hundreds of photos of clouds on his phone.
Yeah.
I go, what are you seeing? So these are UFOs. He goes, these are spaceships. This is not a regular cloud.
Right.
And I'm looking at the photos. Like, he's just been taking pictures of clouds all day. And I realize, oh my God, my friend is going schizophrenic. I didn't know him well.
So he was ill.
Friend? Yeah.
Okay.
The more I talked to him, the more I realized there was something cracked. Like, this is a guy I hadn't seen in like maybe 7 or 8 years. And I ran into him at a comedy club and he was just showing me photos of clouds on his phone. I was like, during the conversation, I realized, he cracked.
But aren't you concerned that that kind of thing is now kind of common? Like that from people who aren't necessarily unwell. People who are just seeing stuff.
Well, it's fun. I think it's It's exciting for people to uncover information that the general public is ignorant of.
Right.
And so there's here's the thing about like the Laurel Canyon thing. There's enough of the CIA meddling in cultural events that's absolutely true and provable.
Yeah.
And that's MK Ultra, and that's what they did with Charles Manson, and that's the book Chaos by Tom O'Neill, which is a brilliant book, which is very well documented in details Jolly West and his influence on the Manson family and how they were influencing these people to try to sabotage the hippie movement.
Right.
So the hippie movement was this change in culture where all of a sudden people were rejecting the war movement. They were rejecting, you know, they were free love and they were doing acid and people were freaking out. Their kids were just disappearing and following the Grateful Dead around. And they took this guy, Charles Manson, this very charismatic con man. They taught him how to dose people up with acid and influence them, and they got them to commit murders.
But there is evidence for this, right? Yes. So you're talking about a book that is researched,
right?
Backing up its points.
Right. No, you're being logical, and you're correct. But what I'm saying is, because of that, people go, well, what else? And so then they make these big leaps, like Jimi Hendrix is a CIA creation.
Right.
But if you're a logical person, you just listen to Voodoo Child's Slight Return, and you're like, how? This is like, if that's true, CIA should get back to work. Make another one of those, bro.
So I wonder whether I think this is the fallout of the woke movement. This is the divorcing of reality and truth.
Yeah.
The idea that it doesn't matter, not just about what is expedient, but what we want to believe. I've got friends
who... I think we should stop saying it's the fallout of the woke movement. I think we should start saying it's a natural pattern that human beings automatically fall into in order to support their belief systems and enforce their particular ideology over whatever opposing ideology is.
But so it's escalating.
It escalates, but it's because of social media that everything is escalating now.
But is it just social media? I mean, I think another thing that's a major reason for it, we had COVID, we had all these experts telling us it's a racist conspiracy theory to say that it came from a lab in Wuhan. Now everyone knows that's almost certainly true. We had people in positions of authority lying to us. So it's something about this culture war.
But that's not real culture war. That was using the culture war because they were trying to cover something up.
But they leapt to race, didn't they? They leapt to identity.
But that's because they were using the culture war to cover up their crime.
So if that's – but in either case, what you've got effectively is a legitimation crisis. You've got people in charge. We've been lied to so often. But what I don't think you should therefore do – I'm all for being skeptical about people in authority, academics, politicians, journalists. They've all lied. But that firstly doesn't mean that all experts and all journalists and all people have lied, because there's been some good ones all the way. But also that doesn't mean that you automatically leap to any conclusion, evidence-free, that jumps before you.
Of course.
Without some kind of critical analysis. The same thing that you're criticizing those people for failing at, you're falling into the same trap yourself. I don't mean you.
But you're,
I mean,
Andrew Doyle. You're a brilliant guy who writes books and you're really smart. The idea is that you are immune to this stuff because you're intelligent, but
the unwashed masses
are not.
I don't think I'm immune at all. I honestly don't. I wouldn't put myself
immune to the dumbest shit.
I'd like to think so.
You are.
But I am. Yeah, but don't you think that all of us in the right circumstances could end up falling for
100%,
all
sorts of stuff, but right? I'm not in those circumstances currently.
But I like to believe, and maybe it's a naivety on my part, but I like to believe that most people have a kind of natural intellectual curiosity, you know, if they stop for a moment and think and don't just trust instinct over reason. I think we're all capable of it. I just think we're not all realizing it.
Well, it's not just that. It's like some people are medicated, right? So some people are on a bunch of different medications that dull their senses. And then you've got people that have gotten to wherever they are in life. Maybe they're in their 50s. And they're set in their ways and they have no desire to change at all. And so they've been living a dumb life for 50 plus years.
Yeah.
You can't all of a sudden say, hey, Mark, I want you to be logical and introspective and think about this thing and analyze it and for what it really is. Instead of holding on to your ideological beliefs that you've kind of locked yourself into and you identify with, and any attacks on those is attack on you personally, I want you to just, let's look at the facts. HELP.com/JRE.
But you saying that sounds very persuasive to me. Like, the way you put that. Like, if I were that guy, I'd be like, oh, I've listened to Joe now.
Yeah, fucking weirdo. No. Fucking liberals, bullshit. You're fucking, you're just a fucking...
They'll come up with some sort of
King Charles III is a goat.
You're a controlled opposition, or you're a useful idiot, or they'll put a label on you.
I've been called, I've been told I get dark money.
How do you get any of that?
Well, I love it. I want it. I want the dark money.
In a captivating shift, the discussion delves into the complexities of identity as the prior exploration of dark money and ideology gives way to examining the current state of gay rights and the implications of societal standards. How are perceptions evolving and what challenges lie ahead for the LGBTQ+ community? Stay tuned to discover more.
Well, firstly, you don't know gay people if you think that's the case. They're not attracted to how you see yourself.
Right.
They know... Gay men, I don't want to be crude, know what a penis is, right? And they know how to sniff one out. Now, I think this idea that they're attracted to the way that you perceive yourself.
Nonsense.
And not only that, then you get, you know, like in Australia at the moment, lesbians are not allowed to gather legally if there's a man who says he's a lesbian and wants to join them. That is against the law in Australia now. So you can't do that.
Wait a minute, what do you mean?
So the Australian Human Rights Commission ruled that if you have an all-female event, right? So like a lesbian gathering, maybe, mm-hmm. something like that. You have to include men who identify as women.
Oh, God.
Because otherwise you are discriminating. There was a woman who I interviewed on I had a show in the UK on GB News up until recently. And I interviewed this woman called Sal Grover. And she's an Australian woman. Used to write for Hollywood, I think. She created a woman's app, a woman's only app. And this was in the wake of Me Too, you know, so there's all that going on. And she wanted to create a space for women. And a guy called Roxanne Tickle, right? They always have these kind of stripper names.
Is that a real name?
Roxanne Tickle wanted to get on the app, which was called Giggle. So, by the way, this court case is called Giggle versus Tickle. Right?
Oh,
I'm not kidding.
Boy.
And he said, he got on the app. She kicked him off because it's a bloke in a dress. And he sued and won. Oh. And in the court case, the judge actually said, sex is changeable. Well, it's not, no matter what a guy in a wig says, but she's now appealing and going through all this stuff just
makes
because
her life hell, and then it discourages anybody else in the future from ever contesting anything like that.
And you know, not only that, I mean, we've just had the other day, was it yesterday? Did you see the girl who was used to identify as trans, a girl called Fox Varian, has just won $2 million in a lawsuit.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
That's big because
she was 16 years old and they chopped her breasts off,
right.
Which is fucking horrifying.
It's the tip of the iceberg, though.
Especially if you have children, you realize like they change the way they think about things year to year. Children are so malleable.
Mm.
It's like one of the delicate dances of being a parent is that you have to love them, but you don't want to steer them in any direction. You want to let them be their own person.
Right.
And, you know, it's like I tried to expose my children to a bunch of different things and find out what they enjoy. And if you do that, you find out that they're all different. They all like different stuff. They just gravitate towards different things. And if you are a domineering, overbearing, mentally ill parent, you can convince your child almost anything. Almost anything. I mean, this is how you get suicide bombers. Yeah. This is what it is, because they're children. This is why you don't get 55-year-old union guys who become suicide bombers. They're like, what?
And of course, you know,
I get 72 virgins?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to work. But you can get young, impressionable children, and you can convince them of almost anything. Like, convincing them that they're actually a woman in a man's body, and don't you want to be a woman, and let's get you on hormone blockers. Okay, mom.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you're ruining this child's life.
But also, I mean, there will be kids who are struggling with how they see themselves in the world. There's girls in particular who, you know, they're developing into women and they don't like the sexual attention they're getting. They'd love
this
to identify.
Abigail Schreier's book.
Right.
Especially autistic girls.
So that's another point. So this is the other reason why I think the movement is essentially anti-gay. Because, you know, the Tavistock Pediatric Clinic in London, which was an NHS gender clinic, which has been closed as a result of the CAS review, this report into pediatric gender care. They found, there's a book by Hannah Barnes called Time to Think, which found that between 80 and 90% of all adolescents referred to that clinic were same-sex attracted. So they were either gay or lesbian or bisexual. Now, that means you've effectively got gay conversion therapy going on the NHS. And so, you know, I'm friends with a couple of lesbians who run the LGB Alliance in London. They have an annual conference for gay rights, and they're talking about gay rights, you know. These young non-binary identified people broke in, unleashed locusts and crickets and insects, a plague of fucking locusts into a gay rights conference. Isn't that the sort of thing neo-Nazis used to do? Right. So, I think you need to have sympathy with people and whatever they're going through. But don't tell a child, if a child tells you, I think I'm in the wrong body, don't say yes. Say, that's not possible. Human beings can't change sex. But let's explore psychotherapeutically what needs to happen.
Let's look at Los Angeles, which is, in my opinion, one of the most mentally ill spots in this country. It's a very weird place.
That's why you left.
Well, I mean, I left for a bunch of reasons. Mostly, I really left because they were telling us we can't do comedy.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll do it.
They closed down the comedy clubs and Texas was open. So the primary reason. And also restaurants and everything. I just knew where it was going. But the point is, like, Los Angeles is a very mentally ill place. Like, if you just looked at like the sheer numbers of people that are medicated and fucked up, like if that's the place that's dictating the tone for the rest of the world, that's dangerous. Because these are a lot of people that just desperately want attention. They desperately want to get accepted. They have to go through the audition process, so they have to change who they are, to talk to the producers, to try to form themselves into something to be accepted. There's a disproportionate amount of trans kids that are involved in Hollywood families. It's largely disproportionate.
Of course.
Some of them have two trans kids, three trans kids. It's like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah. This is not normal. This is not no influence whatsoever. You're using that child as a virtue flag. You're flying that child as a trans flag in the front of your porch. I have a trans kid.
But don't you think that like a lawsuit like this, that's going to change things because no one's going to insure that kind of procedure anymore. No one's that's a surgeon and a psychotherapist who are now lumbered with a $2 million bill.
Yes.
For
and it's
going
to open up the floodgates for all these other lawyers to start pouncing on all these other cases.
That's
and
what I mean.
The thing about the horrible thing about these cases is not just that these children have their lives ruined by these surgeries and have been sterilized, and it's also that they've been attacked.
Yeah.
So ruthlessly. You mean you're talking about children that have made a mistake or someone coerced them into making this mistake that's changed their body for the rest of their life and they're getting attacked online.
As societal tensions rise, the looming specter of organized chaos threatens dialogue. This backdrop sets the stage for the upcoming discussion on a Berkeley event, where differing viewpoints collide amidst protests. Prepare for a dive into contrasting ideologies and the harsh realities faced when free speech encounters fervent opposition.
I got so hurt. I was too cowardly.
But, you know, people impose their own standards on other people and their own ideas of what things are, you know, from the outside. And, you know, it's kind of silly.
Yeah. Oh, Joe, I was going to tell you about this Berkeley thing. And I almost...
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
we got onto...
Sidetracked.
Got onto elephants. But I think the... It was a natural segue because I think this encapsulates all of the stuff you were talking about, which is that I was going to this, basically Charlie Kirk's tour was meant to go on. Berkeley was the last date. And Rob Schneider had agreed to do it. And apparently he'd said to Charlie, you know, what's the craziest place you could take me to? And he said, Berkeley. Berkeley's going to be the craziest. Let's do that. So he was already booked to do it. Wow. After what happened with Charlie, Rob asked me if I'd come along as well. And we'd be on a panel. And I had no idea of the extent of the problem, right? So, and I'm sure you know a lot more than I do, you know. But I turned up. We were there. We turned up, and there were men with guns. We were, in an SUV under the ground. We got into this venue, and suddenly the security starts showing me footage from outside. And people are—it's like a war zone. People are throwing smoke bombs. They're trying to crash through the railings. Some guy gets beaten up. He's covered in blood because he was wearing a T-shirt with Turning Point written on it. And I'm suddenly realizing, you know what? This is a fantasy world that we're now occupying. We're now occupying a world where the people outside think the world is this, and what's going on inside is completely disconnected from it. And I actually found it quite depressing, because when I was sitting on stage talking to Rob and Peter Boghossian and Frank Turek, these people of completely different viewpoints, we're just having a chat. Outside, they're smashing things, they're screaming, they're saying that fascists have overrun the universe. And I'm thinking, just to come back to that point you made about, you know, that need to discuss for discussion, that experience made me think, actually, now what's happening is we're living in two separate worlds at the same time, and we can't see what the other side is, what the intentions of the other side are. And I don't know how you resolve that. I think that to me sort of encapsulated the entire problem.
Well, at this point, it's going to be very difficult to resolve, and I honestly think it's going to take a generation to work through it.
But isn't it as simple as people learning what the word fascist means, for instance.
It's not like just that. It's like they firmly believe that they are trying to fight against something that is going to destroy democracy in this country, which is conservative values.
But we had that with the No Kings. So there's a No Kings march. And I couldn't figure that out. I was trying to figure out what are they... This is an elected leader.
Well, you know it's all organized, right? You know this is all funded.
I don't
know. Okay, it is. So this was Mike Benz's point when he was talking about the defunding of USAID and what they use that money for. NGOs get a bunch of money and they fund a bunch of things, particularly in other countries, where they're essentially making it look like there's these on-the-ground street protests that are very organic. But
right.
It's not. It's very organized and it's very funded. And the idea is to start chaos.
So I've seen people get caught out, people who are clearly being paid, who appear at various different things.
It's not just that. It's also email campaigns. It's indoctrinating people into this particular ideology by supporting universities so you fund it in advance. It's like decades of – this is – I'm sure you've seen the Russian guy from 1984 or 1985, Yuri Bezmenov, talking about the
– Remind me.
You never seen it?
I don't think I've seen
it. It's a wonderful video because it shows you exactly what happened, how they're going to introduce Marxism and Leninism into universities, and then it'll indoctrinate children, and then those children will be poisoned, and within one generation, it'll ruin the United States' entire educational system.
So that's
and
the long
video. Yeah, that's the long.
Yeah.
But you should watch a little bit of
this.
Okay, because it's crazy. Because back then, I remember the 1980s. That would be a crazy idea. No, universities are where people have free thought and discussion. It's very important.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was in a very left-leaning place at the time. I was
where
living in Boston, you know. And
okay.
It's like probably more universities per capita than anywhere else in the country, at least at the time. And it was a very well-read city. Like the idea that universities are going to destroy the way human beings interact and debate, preposterous. But this guy was talking about this back then, that the Soviets had planned this in advance and that they had essentially subverted our entire education system and thereby would those people would leave those schools indoctrinated and enter into the workforce with these new ideas in universal acceptance that these ideas are correct, and then it would in turn, you know, the butterfly effect.
But do you think that everyone I can't be sure that it's as conspiratorial as that, because there must have been a lot of, you know, people who just got on board.
There's money involved in doing this.
Right.
There's a lot of funds that have come from China. There's a lot of money that has been donated to these universities. Like, find that video.
Okay, I found it, but there's like a second version on Twitter I've never seen.
An AI moderated one.
No. Like something, it's just like a
he's now
version.
In a wig. Oh, I recognize him.
So listen to what he says.
It's spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process, which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society.
And yet these people who've been programmed and, as you say, in place and yes. who are favorable to an opening with the Soviet concept, mm-hmm. these are the very people who would be marked for extermination in this country?
Most of them, yes. Mm-hmm. Simply because the psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will revolt. They will be very unhappy, frustrated people.
Recognizing the chilling implications of unchecked ideology, the discussion pivots to the stark realities of mass immigration and its consequences, as seen in countries like Sweden. With public sentiment shifting, the conversation delves into how these experiences might reshape political landscapes and prompt meaningful reform. What changes are on the horizon?
I think people think it doesn't mean anything anymore. And, you know, they've tried with reform. They've tried saying that reform is a racist party. It's a far right party. No one's buying it anymore. And I think that's why hopefully something can change. I think the grooming gangs, I think the mass immigration, to the extent where people now are at risk, they just are. Unvetted people, many with criminal records. We don't want to go the way of Sweden. I mean, you know how bad Sweden's got, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Sweden used to be the most high-trust society in Europe, low crime. They allowed mass immigration on a scale they couldn't possibly contain. I think it's now 20% of Swedish population are now foreign-born. And predominantly, they live in ghettos where crime is rife. They didn't integrate. There was no expectation they should integrate. And as a result of that, it's gone from being one of the safest countries in Europe to being the country that has most gun and bomb attacks of any country not at war except for Mexico. And that's happened in the space of 10 years.
Crazy. It's
an absolute trap. I remember when it was going on, and a Swedish stand-up friend of mine, Tobias Pearson, texted me saying, there's grenades going off in Stockholm. There's gunfire on my street. And the politicians are doing nothing about it. They're saying this doesn't matter. I was in Sweden a couple of years ago. I was talking to a bunch of... And they, you know what Swedes are like? They're very middle class, well, not all of them, obviously, but very liberal, very, like, not a racist shred in their body. And they all came back to the same story. They all wanted to discuss immigration. And they all come back to the same thing. One woman said to me, I got this wrong. We got this wrong.
Why do you think they did it?
Good intentions, first and foremost.
Really?
Okay, well, there's a...
Really? You think it's just good intentions to let all those people in?
Have you met Swedes? You
know, I have.
They're so lovely.
But come on. It's happening in America. It's happening in England. It's happening in the UK.
Yes.
It's happening in Ireland. It's just good intentions everywhere.
Could it also be this delusion, this idea, what you would call, I suppose, liberal universalism, this idea that everyone is basically the same. Everyone in every culture basically wants the same thing. It explains the Queers for Palestine phenomenon. You know, it doesn't matter where you go.
No. The Queers for Palestine phenomenon is explained by the internet and people being stupid and being in a bubble where they never experienced those folks. I think this is organized. I think it's organized. I think the more chaos there is, the more they can crack down on your rights.
I know you think it's organized. I'm not convinced of that yet. I'm open to it.
I mean, it's at one point in time, it's fairly universal in Western societies.
But
now,
in Europe, yes.
In America as well. For the last 4 years before Trump got into office, that's what they were doing here. It seems like a strategy. It doesn't seem as simple as just good intentions.
I know. Well, and that does seem too simplistic. I absolutely agree with that.
You create chaos. The more chaos you have, the more laws you need. The more laws you need, the more control you have.
But speaking to these people in Sweden, I mean, I was there. It was an event where we were talking about a book I'd written. So it was all about these issues. And I was mingling and talking to them. And they all wanted to talk about it. But
they're the citizens.
That's
what
I mean.
They're not the people that implemented those laws in the first place. That's where I'm cynical. I think the people that implement those laws in the first place, they know what they're doing.
Yes. And certainly they're aware of the risks. I mean, if you take what happened in Cologne, that New Year's Eve party, where I think it was over 800 women were sexually assaulted. And the media didn't report it, and the government wanted to sort of minimalize it and say that this wasn't real.
Not even just the risks; it's the physical, actual, measurable consequences.
Yes, exactly.
And they're not course correcting. That to me leads me to think that they know what they're doing.
You don't think it could just be complete naivety? This idea that
I think it's the best way to combat the internet. The best way to combat the internet is create a massive amount of chaos and then crack down on people's lives.
I suppose what worries me about it is though that. The assumption that it's all sort of coordinated will take you down that route where you start thinking, as some friends of mine now think, the world is controlled by a group of Satanists who sit in a room and they choose the, you know, they choose the leaders and they, do you know what I mean?
Like, well, I don't think it's Satanists, but I think it's incredibly wealthy people.
But why would it be in their interest to destroy the economy that so sustains them?
Well, it depends on where they are and who they are. But George Soros clearly does that, and he's talked about it. He's talked about enjoying destroying democracies and enjoying destroying countries. He's not allowed to go into certain countries. He makes money doing it.
But he relies on those democratic societies to make, you know.
Yeah, but they're still functional. He just profits off of it largely.
That's what I struggle with, though. Like, you know, someone who believes in fundamentally the capitalist dream can't
the yearn capitalist dream, for... It's subject to manipulation.
Yeah.
And intelligent, evil people. Or at least amoral.
But this doesn't answer why people do vote for it, and they do. I mean,
vote for it because they've done a really good job of attaching it. And there's also this ideology thing. There's left and right.
Yeah.
And if you're left, you're blue, no matter who, blue to the grave. That's it.
Anybody
that votes red is a dirty racist, fascist, and they think about it that way. And we really have no option for a centrist party in this country, which is where most people lie. Most people lie in the middle. Most people are very socially liberal. And most of the people that I know that even identify as conservative, they're very socially liberal. But they're financially much more aligned with conservative ideology.
Sure. Well, I think ultimately, hopefully, that the brick wall of reality is what cures this. Like, it's when...
If we don't destroy society along the way... If we don't allow them to destroy society, if we don't completely erode all of our rights along the way.
And as you said earlier, you can get very close to that happening.
And rights lost are never regained. Never. Look at Australia. Yeah. They had one mass shooting. They took their guns in the 1990s. Then COVID came. They're like, get in a fucking camp.
Yeah. And they've just introduced a new hate speech law off the back of the Bondi Beach shooting. Oh. And of course, this... Again, it's really draconian. It goes way too far. Uh-huh. In fact, I think the Australian hate speech law is basically saying if someone does something that wasn't intended to stir up hatred, but it could conceivably have stirred up hatred among a theoretical group or group of people, then it's a crime and you can get 5 years in prison.
Sure. And imagine blaming that on hate speech instead of blaming it on just letting wild, violent criminals emigrate into your country.
Right. I mean, that's
imagine.
Something, yeah.
Amazing gaslighting.
Saying,
hey, maybe we should stop letting violent criminals enter into our country illegally and live here. No. What we should start doing is taking people that have done no crime whatsoever and create their descent.
That's all for today. Visit podsummarizer.xyz and start creating summaries of your own podcast in just seconds. Don't miss it.